Man, I love watching TV so much, but I just have kind of had it with the old way of doing things, Dan.
You mean the new way of doing things, which is all of these different services.
I'm sick of the old way. I'm sick of the new way.
What if there
I'm
was
sick
a
of
third,
every way.
What if there's a third way?
What do you mean?
Where you could pay less okay. and get more and get an unlimited DVR.
I would say, well, quit lying.
Well, you could get your realities, like your 90 Day Fiancé.
I love that one.
Your Love and Hip Hop.
Love
it. You
could
get your Christmas movies on the Hallmark, the Lifetime.
Please, please. Up.
You could get your prestige drama on the AMC.
Okay.
You could have an unlimited DVR and you could do it for like, well, under $30 a month.
I don't think so.
You can with Philo.
Tell me more.
Philo TV is the place to find all your faves in one spot for the least amount of money possible. And with an unlimited DVR, it's a win-win-win. It's a third way of doing things.
I'll do it, but sweeten the pot, please.
25% off for 2 months, and I forgot about kids programming. Philo is literally for everyone.
Wow, I love it.
From kids from 1 to 92. For kids from whatever.
You got it.
If you're a person, Philo is for you. You can go to philo.tv/DTH. You're going to get 25% off your next 2 months. philo.tv/DTH. You won't regret it.
Okay.
This is a Bramble Jam podcast.
Hi, I'm Bran, and I love Hallmark movies.
I'm Dan, and I despise Hallmark movies.
Hallmark movies.
And this is the Deck the Hallmark podcast.
Yes, boy.
What an exciting day.
It's a super exciting
day. It's not every day that we watch a movie and Dan looks at me and says, you got to get this guy. That's what happened.
This is exactly what happened. Yesterday, we watched You Had Me at Aloha, also known as Aloha Hawaii.
Exactly right.
And at the end of watching it, early on, I looked up on the IMDb who wrote the movie, and I said, Rick, and then I looked at Rick Garman, and I looked at his filmography and what all he's done, and he's done so many for Hallmark, and I just looked at you and I said, we got to get this guy on the show. And then you made it happen.
I, you know what? Your wish is my command.
I mean, I just couldn't believe it. It was like magic.
That's true friendship.
Within 24 hours, we have the legend. Go look him up, guys.
This guy
has been like writing all of your favorite Hallmark movies, Christmas movies, for a very long time. Rick Garman. Rick, how are you doing, sir?
I'm good, good. I don't know if legend is one I would give myself, but thank you for that.
Well, how would you characterize it? Like best of all time, the GOAT, like what would you say?
I'm a lucky guy who has met some good people at Hallmark who keep me very, very, very busy.
There you go.
Fair enough. That. We'll say legend. You say all that. It's 6-1.
Ours is a little bit more. It's just easier to say.
It's easier to say.
Fit on a business card better.
Yes, that's for right. sure. Rick, let's start at the beginning because I'm guessing you haven't been writing for Hallmark since you were a toddler. But were you interested? I don't know.
Maybe.
How did you kind of get interested in writing in the first place? Where'd you grow up and all of that good stuff?
I grew up in Iowa, but the joke that I use all the time is I got out as soon as I was sure my parents couldn't send a sheriff to bring me back. I moved to LA. I was going to be an actor. I went to an acting school in Los Angeles, the American Academy of Dramatic Arts, and graduated and went on one audition and said, nope, not for me.
Just wow.
Not what I want to do.
What was the audition?
Yeah, do you remember the audition?
It was for a commercial, and it was just, you know, pretty LA people, even back in the 80s, and I'm just not. And, you know, and it just felt very much like, you know, being a commodity, and I was like, I don't have the self-confidence for this. This is going to end badly. So instead, I turned to writing. I sort of thought, you know, I trained in acting. I have read a lot of scripts. Why not give writing a try? So I was working for a theater company in Los Angeles, and they wanted to do a play that dealt with AIDS. This was in the early 90s. One of their company members had died from the disease, and they wanted to do a play about that.
Oh, wow.
But all the plays that were out at that time were sort of very political, very angry, which, you know, deservedly so.
Yeah, fair.
And that just wasn't the theater's audience. So me being filled with hubris said, you know what? I can write a play. Why not?
I'll take a crack at it.
Yeah, why not? You know, I've read plays. So anyway, I wrote a play. It got produced and at that theater, and then went on to be produced in a bunch of other theaters. I wrote another play that also got produced and won a bunch of awards. And then
I just want to stop you really quickly because you just said the first thing you wrote was a play about AIDS. And that is
wow.
That's a big first step.
To have never written anything.
What was the tenor of it? Because you said you didn't want it to be angry, you didn't want it to be overly political. Was it just like satire? Like, what was it?
No, it was a family drama. So it was a story of it took place in Iowa. It was called 17 Days, and it was the story of a family that goes back to pack up their father's home after he's passed away.
Wow.
And they have 17 days to get everything out before the new owners are going to take the keys. And it's three adult sisters and their brother. The brother is a famous singer, and he has AIDS, and he has decided he's going to go public about that. Wow. And again, this is the early 90s. It was before Magic Johnson. It was, any of that. And so the sisters don't want him to. For a variety of reasons, and so, but it was telling it on a very human family level, and so it allowed people to really connect with it.
Wow, man! And right out of the box,
that's what got you started with Hallmark. Clearly,
that's impressive. Right. So, let me ask you this: the first thing you write works. The next thing you write works. Is there ever a moment where you had to, like, do what actors do, like pick up a job bartending or something to make ends meet? Or was this the career? Like, did you just...
Oh, no, no. No, you don't make money as a playwright in Los Angeles. It just, you don't. I always had a job. I had a day job. I worked at Montgomery Ward. Anybody remembers that?
Oh, yeah, selling electronics.
I sold tires and batteries.
Yeah.
At the auto center. I worked for Avis Rent-A-Car. I worked in the entertainment industry. I worked for talent agencies. I worked for Madonna for a while at her record company.
Oh, boy. Did you meet her? Yeah,
I did, many times.
Say no more.
You don't sound excited about that, Rick.
No, she at the time, and still, she is one of the most famous people on the face of the earth. But, I met her a dozen times, maybe, and... every time I had to be introduced to her.
Yeah. Is she the sparkling water lady?
No, that's Cher.
Okay, sorry.
We heard a great story about Cher that sounds like maybe similar to what Madonna was working with there. Yeah. What was the worst job? What was the worst day job you had?
It was later, and I'm not going to name the company. It was, in fact, it was the job that I was working at when I quit to write Hallmark movies.
Wow.
Pretty much. I continued to have full-time jobs and not just a jobs, but a career. I became a fairly high-level internet executive. I worked for Disney. I worked for Yahoo.
Wow.
I ran websites for people. But I continued to write. And in the early 2000s, there was a TV thing that came up through a friend of a friend. We almost had a TV show that got sold to NBC. The story that we were told was that NBC wanted our show, but it was very similar to another show that they were in a bidding war with another network with. And if they told us if they got that show, they were going to take that one. If they got our show, if they didn't get that show in the bidding war, they would take ours. That other show was Heroes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So they didn't take ours. And then nothing happened. And I continued to work, and I continued to write, and built up a pile and higher of scripts.
Was it similar to Heroes? Like, was your idea that similar?
It was not similar in terms of the plot, but it was similar in terms of tone. It was dark, end of the world, apocalyptic kind of thing.
Which this is
very Hallmark.
Yeah, Rick,
you could sell it to Netflix, because I think that's all Netflix does.
Right,
you're talking about dealing with family drama, dealing with the AIDS epidemic, dealing with dark tenor, and then your filmography on IMDb is just one Hallmark movie after another. So how did you're talking early 2000s. I mean, the Heroes came out in 06.
Yep.
And you don't start writing Hallmark movies until 10 years later.
Yep.
So what was going on in those 10 years? Were you just internet executive to the hilt?
Yep. I was just working and writing and looking for opportunities and not finding them. And then in 2015, I think it was, a friend of a friend who was a manager, wound up becoming my manager, would occasionally send me opportunities, writing opportunities, and I would submit things if it seemed appropriate. Well, there was a company that was producing movies for a channel called Pixel.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the way that they developed movies at the time was they would come up with cute titles, and they would send those cute titles around to writers and say, hey, what would a movie with this title be called or be about?
I love that.
It. Sounds like homework.
That's exactly how I imagine it happens, yes, to be honest.
Right. Right.
Right. And so this friend of a friend sent me a bunch of these titles. One of them was called Late Bloomer. And I wrote a description of what I thought a movie called Late Bloomer would be. My friend of the friend submitted that and a few script samples that I'd written. And they asked me to write it. And they loved it. And it got produced. And I did 4 more for them.
Wow.
And that's what got me into Hallmark. So.
Wow.
And so, then it just sort of took off from there.
So when you started working for Hallmark, your first credit is Christmas in Homestead.
Yep.
Was that a similar issue where they said, hey, we got this thing called Christmas in Homestead. Can you take a crack at it? Or was this something where you wrote a movie called Christmas in Homestead and they bought it?
Not sort of in between. So based on the strength of the movies for Pixel, they asked me to pitch them ideas. And so I pitched them one about a movie star who goes back to Iowa to shoot a film for Christmas and winds up falling in love with the mayor of the town.
Yeah. And do you write the, like, so at that point they say yes and then you write the script?
Correct.
Basically.
Yeah, well, we develop the story and it goes through several iterations of what the story is, and we do an outline and all of that gets notes and approval, and then it goes to script.
Yeah, I know that they're very, especially in 2016 in Bill Abbott's heyday, they were very particular about scripts during that time. And so you have to kind of hone your formula. What's interesting is that Christmas in Homestead is an all-time favorite. I don't know if you know, like, we review a Christmas classic from Hallmark every Friday. We've reviewed that movie as a classic. I mean, Michael Rady and Taylor Cole and a lot of people love that movie. So how many notes do you get from this, would you get from Bill Abbott or Michelle Vickery or whomever else, you know, was Randy Pope, whomever else was involved? How many notes would you get on a regular Hallmark script, like going through it?
A lot.
A lot.
Hallmark is very, very particular about their brand. And by that I mean it's not that makes it sound like it's some sort of a callous business thing. It's not. They're very cognizant of what it is that the audience is looking for. They know what the audience likes. They know what the audience doesn't like, and they want to make sure that when they're developing the script, that it fits into those things that the audience is going to appreciate. And so it takes some time sometimes to get there. And there are a lot of cooks in the proverbial kitchen. So, you know, there's a development team. There are sometimes producers, depending on how the script is developed. Then there's the senior executive level. They call it weekend read. It goes into a pile that everybody goes around to the executives and everybody gives notes. And so, yeah, it can be a long process with a very extensive amount of input.
Have you watched a movie on Hallmark that you wrote the script to, and then once it's out of your hands, I assume they can change it if they would like to change it, mm-hmm. like you don't have right of refusal at that point. Have you watched a movie, ever watched one that you wrote, that they changed so much that you were just like, I don't want my name on this movie?
No, not to that level. I mean, there certainly have been movies that, you know, sometimes when a script is in development with a writer and they can't quite get where they want it to be, sometimes they'll bring that to me to make some changes to. But the same thing has happened to me. So I will be writing something and Hallmark feels that I'm not getting it there. They can give that to another writer. And I think in a few of those instances, it has gone to places that wouldn't necessarily have been where I wanted it to go. Obviously, they took me off of it for a reason. But nothing that I ever thought, oh, this is so bad, I don't want my name on it, no.
How did you, go from writing more serious stuff to this world that's, you know, rom-com and, made for TV and they have a formula? Was it hard for you to kind of get into what does these movies kind of look like on the page? Or did it kind of come to you pretty quickly? Did you do your homework? Did you watch a bunch of these? Like, how did you kind of get familiar with the process?
Oh, yeah. I watched a lot of Hallmark movies at the beginning to get an idea of what they were like. But I think the most important thing was over those 20-some-odd years, I continued writing. And I am also a TV junkie. I consume absolutely insane amounts, still today, insane amounts of television. And so I appreciate anything with good stories, good dialogue, and smart characters. So to me, it doesn't matter if it's a dark end of the world apocalyptic drama, or a family drama, or a silly comedy, or a Hallmark movie, or whatever. As long as it has stories and a character that I can connect to, that I think the audiences will connect to, I can usually write it.
So you said you're a TV junkie. I love TV. I love movies as well. But what are some of your favorite TV shows of all time?
Don't get me started.
You don't have to rank them. Just like give me 5, 8, 10, 12.
I wanna even let's narrow it, like, just from a writing standpoint. Like, what are the, like, to you, like, this is like the best written show?
Let's see. I would have to go with Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Wow. It's probably my all-time favorite show.
Gotcha.
More recent stuff, I think Ozark pops into my head for some reason. It's just a genius show. Comedy, I always go back to Soap. It's mm-hmm. sort of one that a lot of people don't remember anymore. Yeah. My brain is just filled.
No.
There's way too many to go for.
Three good, like, varietal picks there. I think those are three really good picks. I was just interested because I watched a ton of TV as well. So in 2017, Rick, how many movies are I'm going to see if you can get this right. How many movies are you credited with writing or having a part in writing in just 2017?
I want to say 5.
I got 6 here. Okay. I got 6, but Bad Date Chronicles didn't come out until way later than that.
Right.
But it gets that on there. What's going on in 2017, Rick? That's a half dozen movies. There's only 12 months in the year. How does that work? Are you just getting one done and getting the next one? Or are you working on all these at the same time?
Working all at the same time.
Wow.
Well, you know, it sort of depends. Some will be in the development phase where we're talking about story. Some might be an outline. Some might have I will be writing the actual script. Some might be further down the road. I'm on a third or fourth draft. But at any given time, especially then, I was probably working on 6, 7, 8 things at a time.
Oh my goodness!
And one of the reasons that they kept coming back to me is that I am able to work pretty quickly. So I was able to turn things around and get them done in the tight time frames that Hallmark has for their productions, which sometimes are just crazy. I think the Royal New Year's Eve still holds the record. Between the time that they told me, yes, go write that script, start writing that script, and the time it was on air was 11 weeks.
Wow!
That is bonkers.
Wait, yep. So how long did you spend on it? Oh, boy.
I lost him. I don't hear him at all.
Oh.
Okay. We got you back.
Okay. We got you back. You're good.
Okay. I was writing all the way up to the point where they had started filming, and I was still working on stuff. Yeah.
Man, I heard. So you got a credit here for Blue Ridge Mountain Christmas, and I have to hear this story. We talked to Benjamin Ayers, who was talking with Rachel Lee Cook, and they thought they were filming one movie, and literally they showed up, and the day before they started filming, they had a different script in front of them. I want to hear your version of what's going on there, because that's all I got from Benjamin Ayers.
Okay. Blue Ridge Mountain Christmas was based on a book. It was Christmas Bride, I want to say. I might not have that title right. I apologize. And it went through just a bunch of iterations in terms of what the story was and what the direction of it was. And that was one that was on Hallmark Movies and Mysteries. which has a tendency to do scripts that are a little bit more serious. Not quite. They're still usually funny and
they're dramatic. A little bit more dramatic. Yeah.
A little bit more dramatic.
Yeah.
And so I think that this it sort of veered from the Hallmark Channel concept to the Hallmark Movies and Mysteries to add, and they wanted to sort of embrace a little bit more of emotion and depth in it as we kind of completely changed the story.
So when did you come in? Did you come in to completely change the story, or was your story completely changed?
I'm the one who completely changed
it. Gotcha. Yeah. I also...
Well,
go ahead.
Sorry, in coordination with a lot of people.
Yeah, of course. It wasn't just me. Of course. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How involved, like you, it says you wrote it, but Christmas in Evergreen is just an all-time like big dog for Hallmark.
Dude, in 2018, he did Evergreen Letters to Santa and he did Pemberley Manor.
You've done a lot of big ones, but Christmas in Evergreen won. Like you wrote it, like that's, and now it's, you know, turned into this whole thing. So talk about Evergreen real quick and how much you were involved in kind of creating the world that is Evergreen.
They came to me with sort of a core concept of people in a town that would get revisited every year. And so I basically came up with the characters and the concept of the first movie, a lot of which has continued on. To be clear, the second movie, Letters to Santa, I just did the story on. It was another writer that did the actual script.
And then you weren't in the next two. You weren't involved. And
correct.
Yeah, which is correct. The first two are better than the next two, which is wild.
Tell me about the red truck. What's the deal with it?
They had certain touchstones that they wanted to use. Wow. That were based off of an artist that they. Used his drawings,
huh,
and he had this series of sort of small town, hometown Americana Christmas, and a red truck was one of the things in it. So,
do you have any idea from a casting standpoint the direction they're going when you're writing, like,
because
you've done two Michael Radys, like, is there any, you don't have any idea of like this is like you did a CCB movie, Shoe Addicts Christmas. Like, did you know Candace was attached to that movie or wanted to do that one?
So sometimes, yes. So Candace, that one, I knew Candace was going to be in. The rest of the cast was a wonderful surprise. Jean Smart was one of the most amazing.
Oh, she's wonderful.
I got to meet her, and it's still, I'm still giddy about it. But yeah, so I've written for her. I've written for Rachel Lee Cook several times. I knew that, you know, and some of them were her ideas. Frozen in Love was her idea. Mm. I've written for Eric Mabius several times and knew that he was attached. But most of the time, I don't know who's going to be in the movie.
Gotcha. Yeah, because that...
Does it change the way, like, if you're writing Shoe Addicts, does it change the way that you are writing, like, kind of... with Candace's, you know, voice in mind?
Certainly, yeah. You hear her voice, but I think a bigger piece of it is knowing the kinds of things, and this is through conversations and through the development of the script, but knowing the kinds of things that are important to them as actors and the things that they want to portray through the movie. For Candace, issues of faith are very important, and I'm not necessarily the guy that you would normally go to for that, but I was able to have really interesting conversations with Candace, and she really helped focus some of the pieces of that script that deal with that.
Yeah, because there definitely is a faith element late in that film that is a, seems to be a part of a lot of her films that yes. comes in.
Interesting.
And to know that she's involved on that level is not a surprise. I think we knew that, you know, already. I do want to talk about You Had Me in Aloha. Before we do, do you have one that you're most proud of? Like, which of these, like, from your pen to what actually went on the screen? Do you watch the movies that you write? Do you watch them? Okay.
Yeah,
from your pen to the screen, which of these are you really feel like was the most your baby, or that you really had the most impact on, or you're just proud of how it all turned out as a movie?
I really, Shoe Addicts Christmas is probably my favorite. It's a little bit like, you know, choosing a favorite child, but Shoe Addicts was special just for a lot of reasons. It was different than what a lot of Hallmark Christmas movies are. It had that sort of magical element to it. It had an amazing cast, again, mentioning Jean Smart and Candace and Luke. And it there was something special about that movie.
That's fair.
So
I want to ask you before we dive into the movie Aloha, Hawaii, as we call it, just a couple of like screenwriting tips, because we got a lot of people that, you know, listen to the podcast that, you know, either dream about writing these movies or try to dabble in it. And I've dabbled myself. And for me, the hardest part is the dialogue and figuring out how to write a conversation. Because when you're having a conversation, you're not thinking about it. And you're not thinking about, like, you know, it's hard to figure out, would this conversation ever actually happen this way?
Yeah.
Like, would anybody actually ask a question this way? Like, what tips would you give to somebody when it comes to writing dialogue to make it sound like a conversation that would happen, but also make it something that people want to watch on screen?
I think the most important thing is to understand that very few conversations include sentences that start and end with a period.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them go off on little tangents. You'll start someplace and then you go over here and then all of a sudden you're over here. Just what you were saying a couple of minutes ago as you were introducing this question is you sort of started one way and then halfway through the sentence you changed direction of where that was going because you had some other thought. And so when I write dialogue, I try to keep that in mind. And a lot of my dialogue has ellipses a lot. I use ellipses a lot. Mm-hmm. So it'll be, I'll write things like what I just said. It'll be dot, dot, dot. I'll write things like, you know, so it sort of changes direction. And that makes it very conversational. It's mm-hmm. it's one of the things that I think my acting training helped with because I was in school and did a lot of plays with dialogue that I'm like, people don't, it just sounds weird coming out of your mouth. People don't talk like this. And so I think one of the greatest compliments that I get frequently from actors is my scripts usually, they just sort of flow from, they're easy to say.
I love that. That's a great tip.
Apparently, I can't speak this morning, but that's why I sit at the computer.
No, you write it, Rick. You don't have to be able to speak it.
Have to.
You're good.
Exactly. Although I do. That is one other thing, another writing tip. I read out loud all of my scripts before I send them in.
I love it.
Everything. Every word of dialogue. And if it feels weird coming out of my mouth, it's going to feel weird coming out of somebody else's. Mm. So
that's right. Man, do you do voices for the parts, or is it just Rick Garman the whole way?
Give me your Candace Cameron.
When they have accents, I will do accents. I'm working on a movie that takes place in Ireland, and so I'm hearing a lot of Irish accents in my head.
I love it. Let's speak of a movie on location. You had me at Aloha, premiered mm-hmm. last weekend. Kevin Smith, Pascal Hutton. This movie, I'm watching it, and 20 minutes into the movie, I go, they are really, this is different. Like, Hallmark's done a lot different the last year and a half, but I feel like the script is a little punchier. I feel like there's some things in here where you get B characters that are literally just getting drunk, hanging out for humor, which never happens in a Hallmark movie. There's very snappy dialogue. Like, there's a few Sorkin walk-in talks in this movie early on. And so I immediately was like, who is writing this movie? That's what I thought. And then I find that you've written, it's not a new writer, you've written a bunch of these. So I don't know how else to ask the question aside from, were you given a bit of a leash that you weren't given in other movies with this movie? Or is this just kind of a part of what we wanted to accomplish with you had me at Aloha?
Sure. Hallmark has always been, but especially recently, has been evolving in terms of what it is that they want to put on screen. And interestingly, I think COVID was obviously bad for a lot of reasons, but I think it actually helped this movie. Because this was ready to go into production last year in March of 2020. They had already started scouting locations.
Wow.
And it was ready to go, and then the world got shut down. And so it sat there for a while, and when they decided to pick it back up, the development executives and the producers came to me and said, look, we want to push this one a little bit. We want to see if we can do some different things to make this one sort of stand out and set a course, hopefully, for some of the I'm trying to think of the right words here, sort of a broader, bigger way of doing things.
Yeah.
So they asked me to push the comedy and to do some things that, you're right, we normally wouldn't do in a Hallmark movie. I mean, that's all the way down to the goat.
Yes.
To the goats. You know, that's the kind of physical, broad, I'm putting air quotes around that, broad comedy that Hallmark usually doesn't do. So, they actively encouraged me to push it. And I think that it shows.
Oh, I thought it did for sure. Like, I feel like watching the movie was a different experience than what you're used to. I mean, I just, to get those opportunities, you just don't see that on Hallmark very often. So you're saying that this is something they're going to continue to do in the future?
Yeah, I mean, I can't speak for
of course, all of
Hallmark, but in terms of the scripts that I'm working on, they are looking for different ways of telling stories. They're looking for different structures. They're looking for different comedic elements. Some bigger, more theatrical, let's say, elements to it. So, you know, the filming in Hawaii was, you know, really made the movie spectacular, I think. They want to be looking at different characters and different types of families and understand that in Hallmark movies for a long time, the world was kind of idyllic. And I think that they understand, I know that they understand, and want to see, and people want to see, that life is messy. You know, it's not always perfect. And so to be able to explore those kinds of things with characters and stories is very exciting.
It's going to be it's just going to be an interesting, I think, over the next year, because the old regime really hitched their wagon to the formula. People are going to come to watch the same thing over and
comfort
over again.
Comfort food over and over again.
And they were right.
They were right.
The ratings proved that they were right. And so the you know, it'll be interesting. We're trying out new things. This is going to be an experiment. Will it affect the viewer? Will viewers still tune in? So that's going to be the and I think Aloha had good ratings. So
it's exciting for us because we love the new, you know, avenue in which Hallmark is exploring. Like, it's super exciting for us. It's interesting to see if, you know, the people that are used to watching 40 Hallmark movies and tuning out until the kiss at the end are going to feel the same way.
Well, look, you know, they're not breaking the mold. They're not going to throw out everything that they've ever done. Again, they know their audience. They are looking for ways to grow their audience and without necessarily throwing out all the things that have made Hallmark movies what Hallmark movies are. So, Aloha, there was still a kiss at the end.
Yeah.
They came a lot closer in other places than you normally see to that kiss. But I think that as we continue to grow and evolve, that's going to grow and evolve the audience, because it'll, and the reaction to Aloha, at least online, that I was watching. I often will tweet along with the movie, and the Twitter world is often overwhelming. But I literally could not keep up. I've never seen the kind of reaction and instant feedback to a movie that I saw on this one. People loved it.
Yeah.
They're starting to feel more like real movies. I know that sounds weird to say, and obviously that's not to denigrate what
the old regime, though, like they had the comedy at 25% and it would never move. No. We wouldn't move that needle. But, you know, a couple weeks ago, we had a movie that dealt a lot with loss on Hallmark Channel, which doesn't happen. And then this week was, you know, the comedy was up higher. And so it's just, you know.
I've laughed more aloud at Hallmark movies in the last 3 months than I have in the previous 4 years.
Yeah, I was just having this conversation with Pascal and Kevin, we were talking earlier about writing movies for people. So I've written the Perfect Bride movies for them. And so I know their I know the way that they talk. I know that I could hear it in my head as I was writing it. So, but I was talking to them and saying that one of the biggest compliments that I've gotten is often when people watch Hallmark movie, when they enjoy them, it's sort of a smile kind of a humor. You know, I was told by a lot of people that there were several laugh out loud lines in this movie.
Yep.
So, you know. I think that's a big compliment.
You did.
For sure.
Both to myself and to them as actors and the production. It's
everything across the board.
Takes a village.
I do want to touch on To Catch a Spy because I just realized that you wrote that and that's coming out soon. And I don't know a ton about it, but I do know that it's, even for Hallmark movies and mysteries, it's kind of a different tenor and what kind of the goal of that movie is. So I don't know how much you can share about that movie and how it might be a little bit different than, you know, an Aurora Tea Garden mystery series. But what's kind of going on with To Catch a Spy?
I think that this is significantly different from the stuff that Hallmark and Movies and Mysteries has done before. There are elements to this that you normally don't see. A lot of the current mysteries are what we would call drawing room mysteries. You know, there's a lot of talking about what happened in rooms and you know there's this one there's it involves hence the title it involves espionage and it's filmed in Malta, which is just this sort of dramatic beautiful place, but that just added to the element of it. There's a car chase you might have seen in the previews, which That doesn't happen in Hallmark movies.
Boy.
There's not, I think I can get away with saying this. There's not just one murder. There's more than one murder in this.
Boy.
It's definitely different and done very purposefully that they wanted to make it feel more theatrical. They wanted to make it feel more exciting, more intrigue, more of everything. This one's been a long time in development, and I'm really looking forward to seeing.
Stop
it.
Selling.
Do you know
Rick,
ahead of time? Because this sounds like maybe a little bit of a bigger budget than a standard mystery movie. You're writing, so do you know, like, we have a little bit more wiggle room, and so work a car chase in there?
Well, in this particular instance, I was told, yes, we could do a car chase. I was actually told it should be a scooter chase.
Dear gracious.
Thank you for pushing for cars.
Thank you. Thank you, Rick.
Else. I did something else. But to their credit, you know, it turned out fantastic. I'm not privy to things like budget, but so usually when I write a movie, I am purposefully vague in terms of set description and scene descriptions, just because I'm never sure what they're going to be able to afford or where they're going to be able to shoot it. Is it going to be a Canada movie? Is it going to be done here in the States? Is it going to be doing, you know. This one we knew was going to be done in Malta. We wrote it specifically for that. It got moved several times. It was Budapest in an earlier version. I don't think that this one had a significantly larger budget than they normally do. It's just they had really good producers who were able to do some amazing things on it. Where do you see some of the locations? In the preview, you'll see there's a cathedral that they shot in that apparently has never been. They've never filmed a full scene with dialogue in that movie. That's what I was told. I'm not 100% sure that's true, but it's stunning. The shots are incredible.
It's unbelievable.
So,
I'm in. But I do love that Hallmark scooter chase. We got $2 million, so we got to go with scooters.
Scooters.
We can afford scooters, right?
Well, again, that was less about cost and more about Medina in Malta has got these tiny little narrow streets, you know, very European medieval fortress type thing. And so I think what they were picturing in their head is zooming down those sort of little narrow alleyways and passageways I think it was more about the visual of it than about the cost.
They did a scooter chase in the Lizzie McGuire movie, and well, I think goodness. That's what they were going for
thank
sure.
goodness you brought
absolutely.
That up. For sure.
Absolutely. It's not pink.
Okay, good.
I do have one, and then I think we'll get to the rapid fire. Sure. I got one question about the script in You Had Me at Aloha, and it is all movie long, these two characters talk about parasailing, Rick. They're like, we should go. No, oh, I bet you if we win, we'll go parasailing. And then they never go parasailing. And as someone who like felt as though that gun was loaded and cocked, for it to not be pulled, the trigger not to be pulled, was a like I couldn't believe it personally. What's going on there? Like, was it purposeful to have them, you know, talk about parasailing the whole movie and then just not do it? Like, because they go ziplining at the end instead. I just thought for sure they'd go parasailing. What's going on there?
I'm going to be honest. I don't really remember how that evolved. I think in an earlier draft they did go parasailing. But again, I think doing things a little different and it became right for the characters to be doing their own thing as opposed to doing what was expected of them. That's sort of was their journey. I think that they actually did go parasailing. We just didn't see it. But you know, developing this the show that Paige wanted to do with the blindfold and surprising him in Bali and then going ziplining, which he had wanted them to do earlier in the script or earlier in the story. It felt more right for the characters to not follow that sort of set thing that people were expecting.
Fair enough.
I love it.
It's a great answer.
We did it.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Let's go to the rapid fire. We each get to ask you three questions about anything that we want to, and you have to answer as quickly and honestly as possible. I'll start with Dan.
So, Rick, you tell me that you currently live in Savannah, Georgia, close to us. What's the best meal in Savannah, Georgia that you've had?
Food there is so incredible, but I would say there's a restaurant called The Ordinary Pub. They've got a thing called Morning Mac and Cheese. It's basically mac and cheese, big eggshell pasta with woven bacon and Dewey sausage and peppers and insane amounts of heart attack on a plate. It's amazing.
Bring it.
Sounds so good. You mentioned your love of TV. We asked you your favorite. I want to know a show that you think is overrated by people.
Let's see. Oh, controversy. I don't know why, but Seinfeld pops into my head.
All right.
I just never got it. Never got the rhythm.
Show
of
about
it.
Nothing, Rick. What are you supposed to get? What's your most memorable movie theater going experience? Like what movie?
Let's see. There's too many. For some reason, again, this just popped in my head. Three Billboards in Ebbing, Missouri.
Oh, yeah.
I saw it at the Savannah College of Art and Design Film Festival. And there was something just incredible about the power of that movie and seeing it in the big screen and with that kind of an audience that was just eager for a really good story and drama. And
The McDonough brothers, both of them, can write such great... Oh my goodness.
Crazy.
The Guard, Calvary, Seven Psychopaths. I mean, some of my favorite movies are written by those guys. In Bruges, yes. I believe. So, yes. Yeah, that's a great one.
Good one. This is related to Hallmark, but it just came to my mind. You mentioned that Aloha Hawaii is over a year in the making, got shut down for COVID. It was on the floor for a while. How many other movies did you have in the can ready to go before COVID that are still just sitting around? Are there many?
I think most of them have been done now. But there were a few. Mix Up in the Mediterranean got delayed because of that. I mentioned an Irish Christmas movie that I'm working on. That one got delayed. There are several others that are still in.
You wrote Mix Up in the Mediterranean.
I did.
That's not on the IMDb. Rick, that's the funniest movie that I've seen from Hallmark. I loved it. It was great.
Sorry. I received executive producer credit on that. I didn't write that. Sorry.
Gotcha.
I got confused for a moment.
Okay. I was about to say, because I got your writers pulled up. I didn't get the exec produce pulled up, unfortunately. Awesome. Well,
an Irish Christmas movie. I could not be more excited about it, to be honest with you.
Yeah. I mean, come on.
Yeah, it's supposed to be filming in a couple of months or so, maybe next month with Lacey Chabert.
Dude, some Celtic Christmas music is my jam. Yep.
Wow. Come on.
Whoa.
That's a scoop.
That's a scoop.
That's a scoop right there. I love it.
And I'm working on another Christmas movie with Debbie Gibson. So.
Oh, wow. Look at this guy.
That's you want to talk about different. This is going to be one of the first movies that's going to feature. So there's a romance for Debbie Gibson and the guy that she meets. Then there's a secondary, not a secondary story, almost equal story with that's an LGBTQ story.
But great.
It's a guy who meets another guy in Salt Lake City, and they begin a romance. So it's two romances, almost equal. And I think it's going to be one of the first ones for Hallmark. So I'm excited.
They did a B storyline with Christmas House. But to have that as a main storyline would be another great step for them, for sure.
Yes.
Is there a particular writer, film or TV, that when you see that this person is writing this, you're in? You don't have to hear anything else. Like, this writer is one of the writers that you know just produces the most quality work that you've seen.
I will veer back to some of my TV favorites. Everything that Susan Harris did was amazing. Golden Girls, everything she did. Joss Whedon, who I know has become problematic lately, but he was always amazing. Aaron Sorkin, West Wing, was another all-time favorite show. I love good writing. The WGA just asked members to pick their top 15 screenplays from their favorite 15 screenplays of the century, of this century so far. And it was really fascinating to go back and look at all the movies and go, how do I narrow this down to 15?
What were some of your favorite screenplays?
Three Billboards was on there. Big Fish.
Yeah.
Love that movie.
Oh, so good.
The Big Short.
Yeah.
So original, different. Inception, Memento.
Yep. Up, come on.
WALL-E. Up, I think, is... one of the most perfect scripts ever written.
Dude, Rick and I would just be good friends. I can tell already. Those are all just great, great movies. I mean, you just unbelievable.
And you're a big Buffy fan. You always tell me that. I've never seen Buffy.
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
It's the one, Rick. I've never seen Buffy, but everything else.
You and Rick can get together and have a Buffy marathon.
That's right. A little Buffy fun. I like it.
I'll watch it for the 15th time.
That's right.
My last question is that you said Iowa, right, is where you grew up?
I did.
Mm-hmm. We're going back to your hometown for a day. You're going to show us the town, show us a good time. Take us through that day in small town Iowa where you grew up.
Well, I actually grew up in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, which is not exactly a small town. It's about 125,000 people. I would go for the food. There's a sandwich there called the Made Right. It's a loose meat sandwich, a loose meat hamburger that's sort of steamed, and I'm going back in a few weeks to see some old friends from high school getting together for the first time in 35 years, and one of the things that is first on my list is, you know, great, it's good to see you, I'm going for a Made Right. So
what else is on the Made Right? I'm here for it, Rick.
It can be anything. The traditional way that they like to do it is with mustard and pickles. I'm not a fan of either of those. I do ketchup and onions.
So
it's like loose meat on a bun with ketchup and onions, and it's just, so good.
Come on. Yeah. Have you seen the movie Cedar Rapids by any chance?
I have, which was not filmed in Cedar Rapids. It was filmed in Grand Rapids. And it made no sense to me why they called it Cedar Rapids.
Could have stayed at Grand Rapids. It would have been fine.
They didn't even refer to Cedar Rapids. It could have just been Grand Rapids. So it was weird.
That is wild. Rick, you've been great, man.
Fantastic.
Thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. We'll have to have you back on again.
Thank you for having me. Anytime.
You mentioned that you do some tweeting and whatnot. How can people find you and follow along to see your tweets and stuff?
So Rick Garman Inc. is my presence, and that's INK. See what I did there? Once I have ink, I have lots of tattoos. At Rick Garman Inc. is Twitter, facebook.com/RickGarmanInc, or they can look Rick Garman Inc. or RickGarman.com.
Love it.
Great.
Fantastic. And we always end every single one of these by wishing you a very Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you, you too.
Deck the Hallmarks of Bramble Jam podcast. It's presented by Philo TV. It's produced by Brandon Gray and recorded live in, Greenville, South Carolina. Set decor is by Plum at Haywood Mall. For more information on Deck the Hallmark, you can go to deckthehallmark.com. For more information on Bramble Jam Podcast Network, you can go to bramblejampodcast.com.